So we're going to study in Ritz Hashem the Ramban at the beginning of Parshas Korach, and maybe we'll get to a Ramban it's a little bit later in Parshas Korach, depending upon time. The Ramban at the beginning of Korach is addressing the question of the rebellion of Korach and how it began, what the background is. He quotes Rashi, who quotes in turn the Medrash Tanchuma. And a lot of this is focused on the syntax, the grammatical translation of the word Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar. Rashi starts with the Tanchuma, you'll see it on the second line of your page. Lokach es atzma. It means that Korach separated himself from the rest of the people, it's at Echad, Lios Nechlak, in order to create a controversy and an uprising, Mitocha Eidol Orer Al Hakuhuna. To undermine the decision of Moshe Rabbeinu to appoint Aaron as the father of Kohuna. And indeed, Unkel is right at the beginning of Parshas Korach, translating the word Vayikach, says V'ispaleg, which in Hebrew means Nechlak, means he divided, he disagreed. Mishar Ha'edo Lahachzik B'machlokas. The Ibn Ezra, if you want to skip a little bit, and maybe we'll get back to some of the Rashis here on the top, says a very interesting thing. He says that Vayika Korach Zeh HaDavar Hoya B'Midbar Sinai. Now let's just think for a moment about the significance of the location. We have experienced in the previous Parsha Shlach the episode of the Meraglim. Does anybody know offhand where that took place? Was it in Midbar Sinai? The answer is no. It was not in Midbar Sinai, it was in Midbar Paran. Now, if the Ibn Ezra is identifying the location of Vayikach Korach, the episode of Korach and his rebellion, as Midbar Sinai, then by definition, what is he doing, the Ibn Ezra? Because keep in mind that chronologically they went through Midbar Sinai first, and then they went into Midbar Paran. Now, if Shlach, which is the Meraglim, took place in Midbar Paran, and Korach took place in Midbar Sinai, then what's Ibn Ezra doing for us? Speak louder. I didn't hear you.
It's not in order.
And the tape for sure didn't hear you. What?
It's not in order.
Right. Ein mukdum uguchar b'Torah. And you could already guess, once I tell you that
Ramban's going to be great.
Excellent. Okay, good. We're very well oiled here, I see, okay? The Ramban is going to go ballistic. That's the word I use, Joe. Because the Ramban doesn't tolerate Ein Mukta Mukha Torah unless the Torah itself tells you that the events are out of order. So why excuse me, why is Ibn Ezra motivated to change the order of this parsha? Why does he insist that it took place before Chet HaMeraglim, Ibn Ezra? So we got distracted a little bit, but Ibn Ezra is not willing to accept the Parshios Kesidron, but rather insists that Korach took place way back, a year earlier, in Midbar Sinai. Now we have to guess, like Sherlock Holmes here, do detective work, why Ibn Ezra does this. And I think the secret lies in the next few words. Kasher nischalfu habechorim v'nivdalu halevim. This episode that the Ibn Ezra is referring to here, namely that Moshe Rabbeinu changes, he transfers the Kedusha of the Avodah from the Bechorim over to the Levim, that took place a year earlier. What makes the Ibn Ezra point to that moment in time and insist that that's where we should place chronologically this parsha of Korach?
Because of the Medrash with regards to him being embarrassed?
Exactly. What generated, what aroused the enmity of Korach towards Moshe Rabbeinu? What was it that Moshe did that made Korach rise up against him? Him meaning Moshe. And the answer is that there was a process by which the Levium were chosen. And within the context of choosing the Levium, Korach got the raw end of the bargain. Because, as Rashi explains, he really had a better right. Let's take a look at Rashi again, just to remind ourselves. Umah. Let's see where's the Umah in Rashi? Yeah, Umah. It's about the 8 lines down. Ma'ra Korach Lachlo Kibosh. What engendered these feelings of hatred on the part of Korach that ultimately led him to rebel against Moshe? Niskana al Nisiuso shall Elifan Elitzofan ben Uziel Shemino Moshe Nasi al Bnei Kahas al Piadibur. That within the structure of the Levium, it was Elitzofan ben Uziel who was given a higher position, a higher status than Korach. Amar Korach, Achi Ava Arba Hayu. So there were four brothers. Amram was the Bechar amongst the Bnei Kohas, and he and his children took both Gedula, both greatness. One became the Melech, that's Moshe Rabbeinu Vayhi Bishur Melech, and one became the Kohen Gadol, that's Aaron the Kohen Gadol. Then we should drop down to the next brother, namely Yitzhar, who's the second in line to Amram. Lo Anisha Ani Ben Yitzhar, I'm the Bechar to Yitzhar, and Yitzhar is older than the other two brothers, one of whom is Uziel. So Uziel is much later, and therefore I should get rights first above Elitzofan. But rather Moshe jumped over me. He mana nasi as ben achiv hakatan mikulan. Hareini cholik olavatul dvar. Now Rashi doesn't go as far as to say hareini cholik olav, that immediately at that point when the Levium were designated for their particular positions of leadership in Klal Yisrael, at that point, Korach got up and he created the rebellion. The Ibn Ezra, though, is outspoken on that. Meaning, immediately after Korach was slighted, was insulted, and became jealous, at that point, he rose up against Moshe. That's the Ibn Ezra's view. I can't tell you that Rashi subscribes to that view. I can definitely tell you the Ramban is going to disagree with that. That I can tell you blind, without even opening the Ramban. And then the Ibn Ezra goes on and he says, Ki chashvu Yisrael shemosha adonenu asa midaato lases gedula li'achiv. And in addition, the accusation was made against our master Moshe that he made his own personal decision without being designated, without being notified or revealed by the divine being, to give his brother the kahuna. So now, kahuna is being given over to Aaron, and the Bechoros are being removed from their stature, and that's given over to the Levium. Amongst the Levium, the Bnei Kohas, it would be Korach's position, Lechora, to get a position as a Nasi, because he would be first in line when we go from Amram to Yitzhar, and yet he was cut out in favor of Elitzofan ben Uziel. So what did Korach do at that moment in time, a year earlier, way before the Meraglim? L'chol b'nei Levi she mishpacha Levium kashre love, the Levium connected with his position, with his gripe, or his, you know, claim against Moshe Rabbeinu Bavur, Yesod Nesudim li Aaron ulebanav. Because now the Levium became inferior to Aaron of Bonov. V'kasha dosan aviron, because they came from Shevet Reuven and they were Bechoros. Bavur sheheisa Bechor mi Reuven aviv v'nasal Yosef. So basically, Korach immediately, upon being slighted, upon being left out, he gathered together the troops in the rebellion against Moshe.
Yeah, but it was only a small group, right? Overall.
No, but again, Byron, the question now is not how large the group was, but at what point did this rebellion take place? And Ibn Ezra says, why not assume, and again, you know, it's a very convincing logical argument that the rebellion took place immediately. Mm-hmm. So you take a look, for example, towards the bottom of page 1, not all the way on the bottom. He quotes the Ibn Ezra, Ki zeh hadavar hayu b'midbar Sinai. And again, I'm skipping a lot of fascinating points in the Ramban that came before this paragraph, but they're more focused on the etymology and the syntax of the word vayikach. And it's a fascinating Ramban. If we had lots of time, and I don't think you're going to blame me tonight for the lateness of the hour, because Meiriv, I think, has hit its latest time here. I can't even remember in my life that I got Meiriv so late. Maybe I did last year, but I guess I managed to forget that. So the Ramban summarizes the position of the Ibn Ezra. Vizeh, on the fourth line of that paragraph, Vizeh midaito shel Rabbi Avram shu omer b'mekomos rabim. See, the Ramban already has his political agenda here, that the Ibn Ezra is accused in many, many places of insisting ein muktam u'mukhar b'torah lirtzono. I like that word, lirtzono, you know, at will. Sort of like carte blanche, you know, whenever he feels he gets in the mood, it's ein muktam u'mukhar b'torah. U'kfar kasavti, this is back in the beginning of Bamidbar, ki al da'ati kol ha'torah keseder. We should be dedicated to the integrity and the sequence of the Torah as it is written. Zulasi, with the one exception, v'mokom asher yifarish hakosuv, the Torah is outspoken, hakdoma v'ichur, to tell us different dates. And we know, therefore, that something is recorded later than the Torah is before. V'gam sham, and even in those rare cases, with tzorech inyan u'letam nochon, it's justified, the reordering of the sequence of the chronology of events is justified by the need and by the logic. Therefore, the Ramban concludes the following. This is the bottom line. Aval hoya hadover azeh b'midbar paron b'kodesh barnea achar maiseh hamarag. But obviously the question is, I mean, I give the Ramban 2 points, if not more, for maintaining the secrets of the Pesukim, but why would Korach rebel about an issue that irritated him, a hatred that he was harboring for an entire year? Vanachom Bedrash, he says, if you really want to dash in this parasha correctly, Shekas Korach al Nesius Elitzofon Kamay Rabosenu, he was angry about the choice of Elitzofon, as it says in Tanchuma, the Kinegamba Aaron, because Aaron got Kahuna, and the pasuk says Moshe turns back and he accuses Korach of Vikashim Gam Kahunas. Obviously, Korach wanted the Kahuna. He disagrees again with Ibn Ezra on a second point, that Dosan Vaviran's gripe was not about the Bechora. That wouldn't have engendered a hatred or an enmity on the part of Dosan Vaviran against Moshe. It wasn't Moshe who was responsible for removing Reuven from the Bechora. It was rather done by Yaakov much earlier. The Bechorah was given to Yosef. What was their complaint? Lamisenu b'midbar, that you brought us into this desert to kill us. Okay, that's very, very significant. Please, at least mentally underline this, or literally underline it, because those two words, Lamisenu b'midbar, which are mouths by Dosav Avir, really contain within them the clue to understand the exact sequence historically of this episode of the rebellion of Korach. And furthermore, Dosav Aviron yell out, V'lol Eretz Zovas Cholv Dvash HaVisonu, where was your promise fulfilled to take us into the land of milk and honey? Instead, we're going to be in the Midbar for another 39 years. Vehine Yisrael v'yosem v'varsina lo ira lahem shum ra'ah. In the first episode, or the first, I should say, chapter of the Jewish people in their process of geula b'mitzrayim, entering into Yisrael, the 40-year process, in the first phase, namely the phase called Midbar Sinai, nothing terrible happened to them. Despite the fact that in that Midbar they violated the terrible Avera, they committed the Egel. Nevertheless, only a small percentage of the Jewish people died as a result of the Egel. And rather they were saved, they were spared, by and large, by the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu commanded a tremendous amount of respect, says the Ramban, because in the wake, in the aftermath of Egel, which was such a terrible sin, Moshe proved, you know, he passed the test with flying colors by proving how powerful he could be in protecting the Jewish people. So imagine all these miracles that Moshe had achieved on behalf of the people. He took them out of Mitzrayim, he brought them into the Midbar, gave them man. Even though they worshipped the eagle, he protected them. Very few, very small percentage of them were killed. And as a result of this, if he would have taken a popularity contest, what do you think the results would have been? Hands down. This reminds me of Obama at the beginning when he took over. You know, he said, rah, rah, rah. Hopefully by now, his popularity has ebbed away. I mean, we all have to pray for that. And maybe he'll be replaced by some lady from Minnesota. That would be good. The Ilu Hoya Adam Moreid Al Moshe Bismanahu. If, as the Ibn Ezra would have it, somebody, namely Korach, would stand up in rebellion against Moshe in Midbar Sinai during that year's period of time, Hoya Ha'am Sokelim Oso. Every rebellion needs popular support. Here, Moshe Rabbeinu had the tremendous popular support. No one could even question, no one could rebel against. Imagine a popular leader of a country and people try to rebel against him or her, it would be a total flop. And at the end of the day, it would bounce back against Korach. And here's the key of keys. Lachem. This reminds me of Chazal that say about Korach, he was a pikeach, he was a smart guy. Maybe he was a brilliant strategist. Maybe he had taken some course in, you know, the psychology of rebellion, of revolution. Saval Korach Gedulas Aaron. He was able to tolerate, even though it was probably very difficult for him. I'm reminded of Haman, you know, tolerating the fact that Mordechai was being slowly being raised, you know, into a high stature, or the fact that Mordechai didn't bow down to him. Saval Korach Gedulas Aaron V'Savlu HaBechorim Mailas Halevim. B'chol Mas of Shel Moshe. Both Korach and the Bechorim, which you're going to number this group of this rebellious group against amongst the Bechorim, the elevation of Aaron, the elevation of the Levim, and therefore they would let Moshe Rabbeinu get away with it for that whole period of time. Avol b'boam el midbar paron. What happened now? So what can you guess is going to be the punchline of the Ramban? See, the Ramban is brilliant because when you study literature, Lahavdil, the greatness of a student of literature who excels is that he reads between the lines. Do you know what I mean? You may recall we once had a shiur, I think it was in your house, about Megillas Esther, and I spoke about the idea of reading between the lines. The father of that methodology, I think, has to be the Ramban. He mamish recreates this whole psychology and this whole sequence of events. He says, when they got to Midbar Paran, something is going to change that's going to facilitate the ability of Korach Vadoso to rise up in a rebellion against Moshe. And what's going to have to, what, I'm not asking you what causes that change, but I'm asking you what's going to have to change. Exactly, the popularity of Moshe. Moshe is going to have to take a very deep dip, a very quick and radical depreciation of his popularity, of his hold on the people. And what happens actually to change that? Number one, Nisrufu Be'esh Tav'era. If you recall the story of the Misonanim, and there was an Esh, Umesu Be'kivas Atava Rabim, and then immediately afterwards in Parshas Balosko we have the story of Kivas HaTav, many people died. And the clincher, of course, is the Chet HaMeraglim, because who died as a result of the Chet HaMeraglim? Everybody. The entire generation. The Kasha Chatu B'Meraglim, who let them down? Moshe was a letdown for them. Where was the great Moshe, the leader of Moshe? Lo ispalel Moshe aleihem, v'lo batla hagzera mehem, u'mesu, immediately they who died, nesiei kol ha-shvatim, the greats of all the shvatim, b'magefa, lifnei Hashem. But that's not the worst of it. V'nigzar al kol ha'am, please emphasize that, she'yitamu ba'midbar, they will be completely terminated in the midbar, v'shom yamusu, there they will die. Says the Rabban, if you think about it, if you analyze the psychology, what was the situation of Moshe Rabbeinu at that point? Ah, it had reached the lowest ebb that we can imagine. Moshe was no longer so popular. In fact, Chazal say that the people suspected him of different types of crimes. It was terrible. Us, ha'isa nefesh kol ha'am mara. What's mara mean?
Bitter.
For you omrim b'libam ki yavol lahem b'divrei Moshe takolos. As a result of the words of Moshe takolos, all sorts of tribulations are going to happen, all sorts of falls. The us, please underline this. Matza korach makom lachlok al maisav. Now's the right moment. He waited patiently for a full year. Planning, scheming. This was a premeditated rebellion. He was just, Korach was just waiting for the right moment. V'chashav, and he thought, ki yishmu elavam. Now he could rally the people behind him in a rebellion against Moshe. And you recall, I told you 5 minutes ago, to underline two words. Dosam avirim selam yisenu v'midvar tam. Is that tam? This is the meaning. The true meaning behind the words, lam yisenu v'midvar amru. What were Dosam Aviron claiming? Hine, look. Hey, Veso sonu ala mokom azeh. Lo kiyamto banu mashin adarto. You promised to take us into the Eretz of Aschol v'dvash. Lo nasato lanu nachlo klal. You gave us nothing, not even a piece of Eretz Yisrael. And instead, avol nomus b'midbar v'niyah kolim sham. We will completely die out there in the midbar. Kigamzar enu lo yetsu min midbar liol. See, this is where Dovsav Aviron crossed the red line, because this is not true what they're saying. But they said, look, if this entire generation is going to die, then even the children will die. And then at the end of the day, yibatel min abonim asher nadartam. Don't be foolish, they turned to the people. They said, don't believe Moshe for a minute. He's admitting to you that the whole generation is going to die, but he's telling you that the promises of entering into Eretz Yisrael will still be fulfilled. Oh no. The same thing that happens to the Avos, when Moshe made a vow and he can't live up to the vow, it's going to be violated, it's going to be nullified. So too the vow that he gives you now that your children will go into Eretz Yisrael, that too is null and void, it's not true, it won't happen. So this I find absolutely fascinating. Korach, in fact, was harboring this enmity for a full year. He knew that he would not be successful in his scheme at that point. He could not rally the people around. Moshe was too popular. And he patiently waited, together with his cohorts, for the right moment. When the tides were going in the opposite direction against Moshe, when the people would really see how sad the situation, the plight was, that Moshe was not living up to his promises, he wasn't praying on their behalf, he wasn't protecting them, they'd all die, they wouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. But every rebellion has to have a platform, does it not? Good. The people are disappointed. There's a lot of bitterness. But you can't just rebel against the leader unless you have a political platform. Now, my Rebbe, the Rav Zichron Vracha, many years ago, it was a little bit before I came to the Shia, 1973, I think it was. I came in 73, but a little bit later in 73. He gave a public Shia. And Rabbi Bezdin, all of the Shalom Avram Bezdin, has summarized this Shia in Reflections of the Rav. It's called The Common Sense Rebellion. This Shabbos, I was at Jeremy McGenzie's house, and I was sitting at some ungodly hour because I didn't sleep that well, not because the Hatnas Orchim wasn't good, in his study, and I found a book that had this shiur of the Rav transcribed. Brilliant. By a fellow named the name of Rabbi Schreiber. I don't know if you've ever seen these pamphlets. It's called Noros HaRav. And in volume 14, he has the whole shiur written out with footnotes. He elaborates. He really polished it up. And it's a magnificent shiur.
So you didn't get to sleep at all then?
What I'd like to do with you guys, if I can call you that, for the next few minutes, is to summarize what the Rav says in that shiur. It's all, I believe, based on this Ramban. And try to add something of my own. Is that okay?
Great.
The Rav says that there were a number of rebellions that took place in the Jewish people before Korach, during this period of Midbar. But none of them were premeditated. None of them were well planned or well thought out. None of them had more of a platform than just what you would assume to be the natural reaction to a tragedy or to difficult situations in the Midbar. The people complained they didn't have water, they didn't have food, they didn't have meat. You know, there were tlunot, there were complaints. But that's not the case in Korach. Korach comes forward with a, as I said before, a premeditated, well thought out, well planned rebellion. That rebellion, or let's say the motivation for that rebellion, was simmering within Korach and his people for a long time, for a year. And based on this Ramban, we see that Korach was waiting for the right moment. But you've got the background now, you've got the stage set for a rebellion, you've got Moshe Rabbeinu's popularity in a low ebb, as we said, but you still need to rebel a platform. So the Rav suggests that there are two arguments that Korach puts forth against Moshe. In both cases, they're put forth publicly in order to scoff and laugh at Moshe, to undermine him, to undermine his authority, and therefore to basically undermine the prophecy of Moshe, and therefore the Torah itself. One of these two arguments is upfront in Torah Shebichsav. The other doesn't appear in Torah Shebichsav at all, it's in Torah Shebichsav. What's Moshe's argument in Torah Shebichsav? Ki kol ha'edo kulam kedosh. V'lomit isnas al amash. You, Moshe Rabbeinu, missed the whole point by lording it over us and appointing Aaron to lord it over us. Because kol ha'eda kula kedosh. The Torah has a democratic approach in which every Jew, insofar as he's Jewish, he's a descendant of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the Avos and the Imos, and therefore he has been endowed with the kedusha. That Kedusha is identical. It matters not whether you are the greatest scholar in the generation or you're the simple woodchop or the water drawer. As the Pasuk says in Parashat Nitzavim, Michote ve'tzech v'ad shove ve'mecha. Kol ha'ed kulam kedosha. What gives you the right to self-appoint yourself and claim, or in the case of Aaron, to appoint your brother Aaron, you have the special ksarim, the special crowns, the special sanctity. Your sanctity is superior to ours, and therefore you're going to make all the decisions, and you're going to be the sovereign ruler over us and decide who's got which leadership role and who plays what in the Mikdash. So the Rav asks the question, that's a pretty strong argument. Can you deny that in truth every Jew has the identical Kedushas Yisrael?
I understand. The Jew gave him the rule. He could tell him what to do. What is he asking for Moshe?
But again, Moshe Rabbeinu is... Moshe Rabbeinu's claim that it wasn't he who appointed Aaron is based on the fact that he has a superior position. if all Jews are equal in the eyes of God, what gives you that superior position that you could claim? Why can't I come along and claim that God told me this or I think this? So the Rav explained very beautifully that Korach missed the boat on the following. There are two kiddushos to every Jew. One kiddusha Moshe Rabbeinu would admit, and Korach is correct, is unified, is universal, is absolutely identical to every Jew. That's the Kedusha that we inherit from our Avos. That's the Kedusha that we're endowed with insofar as we're born Jewish. There's a second Kedusha. And that's the individual sanctity that separates every Jew from the next Jew. His own individual, unique Kedusha, which is earned through Amel, through toil, through work. And from that perspective, no two Jews have the same kedusha. Kishen, she'en, partzufeim, domozuein, deoseim, do. Every individual has his own character. And he works, and he toils, and he rises, and he elevates himself. It's not fair, it's not correct to say that every Jew is equal. Every Jew is equal insofar as the first dimension of Kedusha is concerned, but there's another dimension of Kedusha. The Rav develops this based on Parshas Re'eh. I want to leave something for Parshas Re'eh, maybe by Skype or whatever, and we'll talk about it then. He has a beautiful interpretation of a pasuk with the Rashi about these two types of Kedusha. He also ties it in to Zekei Manvehu, Elkei Avi Varomemenu. Beautiful. Puts us all together in a beautiful way. The Torah is democratic, but yet every person has his own ability and potential to create his own unique kedusha. And this is half the shiur. But what interests me is the second half of the shiur. And the second platform, the second argument of Korah, which is not in the Torah Shabbat Sav, but it's in Torah Shabbat. Rashi quotes it, you'll see it on the top of page 1, in the name of the Medrash Tanhuma. Yeah, the tzitzit story. And this is going to link up Mirtz Hashem with our discussion about tzitzit. He says, Ma osa, if you take a look where it says Ibn Ezra, and you could jump up 1, 2, 3, 4 lines, the second word in the line is Ma. Do you see that? Omad v'konas masayim chamishim Roshei Sanhedros. He assembled together 250 leaders of the people of the Sanhedrin, Ruba Mishevet Ruvain Shcheno, because Ruvain again had a gripe. Fine, we'll skip a little bit. Vihilbishon Talisos Shekulon Tchelis. Now, my friends, I can't tell you what Kol Tchelis is for sure. I'm not positive. But the Rav in this Shia assumes it's purple. Purple is a very flashy kind of color. It can be a very beautiful color and certainly dramatic. Bo v'yomdu lifnei Moshe, amru lo. This was a public contention against Moshe, an argument against Moshe. Talis shekula tcheles, chayevis betzitzo p'tura. I mean, the whole ganze beged is made of tcheles. It's not one chut. Folded into two is two. It's the whole, all the chutim of the beged are made of tchelis, ribono shel olam. What more dramatic expression or surah, you know, physical appearance of tchelis could you have than having the entire beged tchelis? And by the way, I'm reminded of many people today who use these flashy talisos and they get, you know, the different colors and the whole thing, and before you know it, the talisos are going to start looking like the Star Spangled Banner. I mean, the American flag, or I don't know what flag. So Amar Lehem Chayeves. Moshe's response was, you got to put tchelis onto your beged. I don't care if the beged is made of tchelis. That's irrelevant. Ischilu Rishok Ol. Ha ha ha. Efshar tal shal min echad v'chut echad shal tchelis potra. Excuse me, shal min acher. If the talis is made of other colors, or another color, and one chut of tchelis patters up the whole beged, zoo, shekula tchelis, the talus is completely made of purple, lo tiftaris atzma, how could it not be? And that's pretty much what you'll find here in Rashi, in the name of the Medrash. In fact, though, truth be told, the Medrash goes on, and Korach puts up another argument. What if you have a bias? Mole Sfarim. It's made full of Sfarim. It chayeves b'mezuzo, and it chayeves b'mezuzo. So Moshe Ben said chayeves. They started laughing at him. What's in the mezuzah? Two parashas in the Torah is enough to pater the whole house. And you have a house that has all the parashas multiple times and it can't pater itself. What we don't find in Chazal is the counter argument of Rosh. And this is what the Rav spends the second half of the Shir. And it's a beautiful piece. Again, I apologize that I couldn't borrow it and then photocopy it. It would be many, many pages. But if you get a chance, again, part of it you'll see in Reflections of the Rav, which I have here, maybe we could photocopy parts of it, that was put together by Rabbi Bez and Olam Shalom. But the real McCoy, in its original form, you'll see in Shriver's Noros HaRav Chelek Yudal. The gist of it is that Korach's argument touched on the very essence of what mitzvahs are all about. A mitzvah, says Korach, is meant to evoke an emotional response. The goal of every mitzvah is to feel some sort of religious experience. In the case of Tcheles, we know what the religious experience is. Chazal reveal it to us. Tcheles doma liyam, v'yam doma l'rakia, v'rakia doma l'kisei hakovod. It's basically meant to evoke a religious experience of awe of the throne, the malchus, the kingship of God. Said Korach, I don't get it. You want to evoke a response, an emotional response? That's the goal of the mitzvah? Give it a break. If the talus is kula tchelus, imagine a garment that's made purely of purple. And that color is supposed to impact on the perception and on the imagination of a person to create this chain and evoke an emotional response of the fear of the Lord. What could be greater than a talus shekula tcheles? One chut of tcheles? Kal v'chomer if the entire beggar is made up of chutei tcheles. So the Rav says, so where did Korach go wrong? Once again, you know, it's like Korach pikeach on you. You know, he had some sort of an insight and an argument. The Rav basically says that this argument of Korach in various forms reappears throughout all of Jewish history, and especially in our time, when the generation is saying, let's approach halacha logically and we'll reinterpret all sorts of halachas in a logical way. Touching on the very commonsensical thread or chord within a person. So the Rav, again, it's very sophisticated, his approach. He uses very fancy language. And basically he says that the philosophy of Korach will lead to what he calls religious subjectivism, which is something that we had touched on, the Rav speaks about in Halachic Man. And that is that you can look out at the world and decide for yourself what experiences will invoke what emotional responses and put you in the mood for worship of God. And then you can create your own new religion, which is basically Avodah Zarah. And the Rav speaks about music, you know, hypnotic music, which a lot of the, you know, the paganistic religions use that, and talk about incense, and talk about, you know, dancing and singing and so forth and so on. Said the Rav, Korach missed the point. When you start with subjective emotions, we don't know where it's going to lead to. We can't determine what's right for you and what's right for him. You're left with a subjective mush that lacks any sort of structure, any framework, that's not objective at all, that shifts and changes by the day, by the person, by the mood, and by the hour. And at the end of the day, who's going to guarantee that any secular mundane experience which is aesthetically pleasing to you or is meant to endow or engender with you feelings of fear and reverence of the Lord is not going to achieve the opposite? And so the Christians will build these beautiful edifices called churches, and that's supposed to evoke a certain response. and you as Jews want to imitate them and build these beautiful citadels. That's not the way it works. The Rav says that what Yadus preaches is that there's a mitzvah. It's not that the emotions are irrelevant or insignificant, but they're secondary. The sequence has to be first do the mitzvah act, first obtain the kiyum mitzvah, and then the kiyum mitzvah will evoke an emotional response. If you begin with your own drummed up emotional frenzies and experiences and secular celebrations and rituals, it's not going to evoke the response. You need a kiyum mitzvah. The kiyum mitzvah, if it precedes the emotions, will achieve the goal. So, for example, on Yom Tov there's a mitzvah of stukh, and Rachmana Litzlan during Avelus is a mitzvah of Avelus. So you can decide for yourself, you know, what's going to bring me to Simchas Yom Tov? Yeah, I'm going to listen to a symphony orchestra, and that's going to lead me to Simchas Yom Tov. Or I'm going to rip, you know, my skin, and that's going to give me a kiyum of Avelus. The Torah says no. It will define in objective terms what the act is. That's the mitzvah act, and that mitzvah act, and only that mitzvah act, will evoke the proper response within. I finished reading the shiur, the transcribed shiur, and I was left a little bit wanting, a little bit unsatisfied, for two reasons. Firstly, which is more of a technical reason, why did Korach feel compelled to put forth two arguments, both of which even the Rav admits in the shiur are the same, namely, Talis Shekula Treles Bias Mole Sfarim, and the Shia does not differentiate between the two. In both cases, the Rav insists that Moshe's answer would be, his response would be, that you need the Maisa Mitzvah, the Kiyum Mitzvah, and then the emotional response. So you need the Chut Shel Treles in the case of Tzitzis. You need the Mezuzah, in the case of Mezuzah, that's the Maisa Mitzvah, that's the Kiyum Mitzvah, that and only that will evoke the proper, bona fide, genuine emotional response. My second problem was that when I think about Korach's argument and the way the Rav presents Moshe's character argument, I'm still left confused. Because if the Torah sees one chut of Tcheles as a Kiyum Mitzvah, why couldn't a beged with 50 chutim of tchelis be a kiyum mitzvah? If the Torah sees two parashas placed on a cloth as a mezuzah and a kiyum mitzvah's mezuzah, why couldn't the Torah say that putting svar in my house would be a kiyum mitzvah? The Rav doesn't really address that question. What do you say?
Why do you say? I mean, the kiyum mitzvah is on the corner. The kiyum mitzvah is on the lintel of the house.
So basically, what you're saying, that's a divine decree.
Yeah,
but again, even if I grant the Rav's assumption that you need a maisa mitzvah, a kiyum mitzvah, otherwise it's religious subjectivism, I still don't understand why the maisa mitzvah couldn't have been the entire begin. You understand what I'm asking?
We have with regards to the meaning. Four minim, not five. Why couldn't you see it? I mean, if you're saying that, you can
correct
the same way. You can't
correct.
You can't take five.
So the answer is going to have to be, Joe, at the end of the day, Gzeres HaKos. This is a divine decree. Almighty God, in His wisdom, He understands, and we don't. Okay. So if that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to Korach, then drop your argument about Talis Shekula Tcheles, as logical and as commonsensical and attractive as it seems. Drop your argument about Avali Smali Smar, because it's a Xeris HaKos. If that's what it comes down to, it's not candid. So they're basically speaking two different languages. I mean, Korach is saying, okay, the Torah decreed a mitzvah of tzitzis, but let's analyze the mitzvah of tzitzis, use our common sense, and let's go beyond, you know, the... And Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, no, Gzeres HaKosuv. I don't get it. It's not a gishmak argument. So look, what I'm about to say is my own. And as I always tell you, that when I say my own chidushim, you can either take them or leave them. You know, you're the jury, and you decide for yourself. There's no kaf aleihem har kegigas. There's no religious coercion here. I can't beat you to a pulp.
What I want to suggest is the following. Do you know why the Torah says that a talis shekula tchelis is chayeves betzitzis? I'll tell you why. Because the talis does not have the status of kedusha. It is completely devoid of sanctity. What the Torah is telling me, and I'm going to show you how it applies to mezuzah in a different way, is that life, existence, the universe, has a duality to it. It's made up of two different elements. And those elements must be separated one from the other. It's kodesh and it's chol. The goal of the Torah is to take the chol and by injecting something from the world, from the dimension of kodesh into the world of chol, to change and elevate the chol. But the chol can't do that within itself. The beged is totally secular. Its goal is, number one, to protect the body from things that might fly in the direction of the body. Number two, to warm up the body. We can appreciate that here in this climate. Not now, but during most of the year. It's like my in-laws got off the plane, you know, before Shavuos, and I said to them, it was a gorgeous day outside. I said, it's always like this in Canada. You know? This is our first time in Canada. But you need a beged. You also need a beged because it lightens up life. It's got color to it. You know, the women are better at this than men are. You know, men get a little boring. Although some men are a little bit more into colors. I remember that my wife used to always tie it to me because I didn't appreciate flowers. The truth be told, I didn't even see them. That's how bad it was. Until I got into art. After I got into art, if you're familiar a little with the Dutch masters from five centuries ago, what's called still life art, their favorite subject is flowers. And if you'll see these paintings in the original, you will just blot. And ever since I got into Dutch art, I started appreciating flowers. I started noticing them. But many men won't even notice them. A beged could be very exciting. Colors, got shapes, design. I mean, there's an entire industry out there, I don't have to tell you, of, you know, these brilliant minds that figure out how to make billions of dollars by coming up with design, new designs of clothing. And what's the need that they're filling in fashion design and clothing design? The answer is that people want to use gadud to lighten up their life and whatever the aesthetic beauty is all about. All that is wonderful, but it's secular. Now the Torah says, inject Kedusha into the beged. What's the Makadesh? What do you say?
A
tzitzit. One chut, that's all you need. One Kiddush could sanctify tons. Endless spaces in the universe. Rabosai, what's the difference between the chut of tzitzis and all the chutim in the beged?
It's tashmis.
What do you say?
It's tashmis. It's actual.
It's miyuchad.
You close? I need a word that has four letters in it. Starts with a lamed, ends with a hey. And has a shin mem in the middle.
Lishma.
Yeah. Okay.
What's called tviya lishma. What's tviya lishma? At the time that you weave the thread, you've got to have lishma. The beged you buy in the secular market, in a commercial garden. You go down in Manhattan, they have the garments the district. You know, that's where the Jews came when they came from Russia at the turn of the previous century. You know, that's where they infiltrated too. And even to this day, you know, the Syrian Jews are in the shmata business. You know, we, the Jews, you know, took over the garment industry. So we have, but the garment industry is mass produced. It's manufactured. There's no tevil lishma. You produce a sefer. It doesn't have to be written lishma.
Today, of course, we're in the post-printing era. You know, a printing press was 5.5 centuries ago or more. What was his name? Skips my mind. The guy who invented the printing press. No. I forgot his name. That's just embarrassing. Anyway, so there's no din lishma. Oh, but what about those two parashiyos on a klaf of tzitzis? On a klaf of mezuzah? They have to be written lishma. My friends, this reveals what I consider to be the most fundamental point in all of Judaism. Man is endowed with the infinite ability to sanctify an object. Sanctification means to take the Shekhinah from up on high and bring it down into this world. The power of man to be makadish, a chefta, tangible object, is mind-boggling. It's enormous, it's huge, it's infinite. It means bringing down Shekhinah into this physical world. And let the Bali Kabbalah explain the mechanics of it, the physics of it, Alpi Kabbalah. But what we know Alpi Halacha is that the object, through human thought and action, becomes sanctified. And not only does it become sanctified with Kedusha, it has the power, through contagion, to penetrate, to expand that Kedusha to other objects that are totally secular, that are mundane. All the potential of man. What Korach didn't understand is what Yahadus is all about. What our Torah teaches us is that the Shekhinah is up there in the seventh Zvul, and the Shekhinah could be happy up there too. God doesn't need man, we need God. But God endows man with the ability, the potential, to take the Shekhinah from all the way on high and bring it down into this world. The greatest symbol of that is the Mishkan itself, the Migdash. That man has the ability, Bezalel and all the Chachmei Lev, to bring the Shekhinah into the Dalet al Dalet cubits of the Mishkan. But it applies to everything. It applies to Matzah Lishma, and Tfilin Lishma, and Tzitzis and Mezuzah, and so forth and so on, to create Kedusha. The Beged itself, Kol HaKavod Lecha, could not evoke a response. You know why? Because it's a cheftza of chol and not a cheftza of kodesh. When does the beggar get endowed with kedusha? After that one chut, which has its sanctity, is attached to the beggar and is makadish the beggar. And now I think we can understand the two arguments of Korach, the two demonstrations of Korach that Chazal insist for all of eternity become part of Torah Shabbat. Why do we need both the talis and the mezuzah to demonstrate the power of man to create an act of kiddush, to sanctify and elevate a secular mundane object and evoke an emotional response?
Action and thought?
Close. You know, I told you I didn't go to dental school, but I should have. I'll tell you what I think it is. Do you remember the pasuk, Baruch Ata Bivoecha, Baruch Ata Betzeisach? The human being is a holich. The Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak of Ovis, Hakavi Bemalal, Ula Onata Holich. Man as a spiritual being is a holich. He leaves the confines of his house, that secure place, which he calls home, and he goes out. And he enters into a world of secularism, of business, of daily life, of interpersonal relationships. And what does he have to do in that life? He's got to sanctify. He's got to bring Kiddush with him. The Gemara says about Rav, Lo ra'u adam me'olam holech dalet amos below tzitzis. No one ever saw Rav walk 4 amos without tzitzis. What's the Gemara trying to tell me? Okay, so Rav wore tzitzis. Great. Give him a yashikar. But so what? The Gemara is telling you something much deeper than that. Wherever Rav went, wherever he entertained, he
He engaged people, he encountered people in every area of life. He had his tzitzis, or isim oso zchartem as mitzvus Hashem. He brought the kiddush, the sanctity with him, b'chol tzad v'shal on his halacha. But that's not enough.
That's the
tzitzit. You need something else. Man cannot always be out there in the world and expect that the energies of Kedusha, even as great as the tzitzis is, will serve the goal, will achieve the goal. He needs to be planted deeply and anchored in a bias. The word bias refers to Beis HaKnesses, to Beis HaMikdash, to a place where man, in a sense, collects all his ruchnis, all his religious and spiritual endowments, his midos, his attributes, and brings them together, kones l'toch habayis. It's a place where he can engender those feelings and those emotions and those commitments. But within the bayis, where he's in the privacy of his home, of his family, he needs a makadish. And what's the makadish of the bayis? The mezuzah. Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Korach publicly in front of all of Klal Yisrael, in order to evoke that response, that reverence for sanctity, for divinity, you need a Makadish. Not one, but two. You need the Makadish of the bayis, and that's through creating a mezuzah on cloth written Lishma, and you need a Makadish on the Begin when you're going Bachutz, and that's the Chutzal Tchelis with Tviel Lishma. Man is endowed with an unbelievable ability to Makadesh objects, to sanctify them, to bring the Shekhinah down in this world. And through that act of Kiddush, to penetrate into all dimensions of secular mundane life, of daily life, and uplift them to Kiddush. Yiratzav et his will, that we take the lessons of Parshas Korach and appreciate what Hashem has done for us and given us and endowed us with. And we in turn will sanctify everything in life, not just through the mezuzah, and not just through the chutzal tchelis, but through the Beis HaMikdash, sheibana b'mehirah v'yameinu.
Amen.